Okay, so Matt, I want to take you back to when you were a kid and you got to see Star Wars Episode 1 in the movie theater, Phantom Menace. Up to this point in time, we've seen red sabers, we've seen red lightsabers, we've seen blue lightsabers, but they're all sort of held with two hands and there's one blade. And we've seen this new guy on the film, Darth Maul. We're back at Naboo, and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are trying to get Padme back to the throne room, right? And the doors open up, and Darth Maul is there, and we get this setup of like, oh, we'll handle this, right? We can tell that a lightsaber battle is about to happen. Darth Maul sticks his hand out, one blade comes out, and then on the other side, another blade comes out, and we're like, what? Double-sided lightsaber? What? How is that? What?
Had to power wash brain off of the screen from all the exploding brains in the theater.
It was crazy. Minds were blown. I remember the cheers and it was just incredible, right? And in terms of lightsaber battles, I think that's actually one of the best ones is Duel of the Fates, right? The music, it's amazing. But just that moment of both sides, what? Minds blown? Okay, so today, dear listener, I hope that we can blow your mind just like a double-lighted lightsaber, because Matt and I are going to flip roles. So right now, I am going to defend The Last Jedi. I know I've been critiquing it, and I have a lot more I could do, but I am going to try to convince Matt that this movie is amazing while he tries to convince me how crappy it is. So this is going to be Matt's gripes and Aaron's likes, and maybe this will be a double-lighted lightsaber. Maybe we've got a broken kyber crystal. Who knows? But we're going to go forward, and we're going to try it out. So, Matt, let me give you my first like, okay?
Okay,
so,
all right.
As you know, as we've talked about before, I'm a Lord of the Rings guy, which means I like books. I like the books.
Okay.
And Tolkien was so good because he's like, oh, here's these books, you know, and there's writings and writings and writings and writings and writings. Star Wars has no books. No books, no books, no books. You've got these data pads. You've got holograms, you've got holocrons, you've got all of this different way of transferring data, but no books for 7 movies until a very brief moment in Episode 8, The Last Jedi, when Rey is called to this ancient tree and there's a shelf of like books, and my little brain just goes, what's in the books? I want to go read the books. Like, I was so excited to see the books. They were so amazing. Like, just the idea of books that hold force lore within them was so, like, man, even right now, my heart rate is, like, raising. It's increasing.
But the ancient Jedi texts!
Ancient Jedi texts! Page turners, they were not, right? Like, I know Yoda gets really funny about it. He's very Star Wars-y about it. And Rey gets to keep the books. But when I saw the books, like, this is the only paper that we've ever seen. And I do love how Luke pulls it open. He says, like me, they're an ancient relic, the last surviving ancient relic of this ancient, you know, thought system, whatever. And he is very gingerly brushing his hand along the page. And in that moment, we're just like, I want to touch the page. Can I touch the page? Let me touch the page. I want to see the page. You know, and he's got that symbol of the ancient Jedi symbol that they had there. And I was just like, man, I love that. Like, I was just almost crying because I love the books and I wanted to dig into the books more. And maybe we will later. I don't know. Rey saved them. So maybe we'll see more of them later. But that was a moment for me where I was like, this is awesome.
I'm not allowed to agree with you on this episode, so I have to. We'll have to edit out the hug. I want to, but before I give my even first thing against this movie, I just want to be very clear. Part of the reason this whole pod even exists is because with things that I like, I don't spend a lot of time. It's not that I'm not critical of them, but I don't enjoy discussing the things I don't like about things that I like. So if there's a movie that we see and we like it, I'm good just talking about the things that we liked about it. And the things that we didn't like about it, like, who cares? Because we both liked it. That's not always the case with this movie because a lot of people did not like it. But what happens is people think that you're just holding this movie up on this pedestal as like this perfect movie. And that's not the case. But why am I going to spend time, you know, trashing the movie if I love it, right? And to be fair, I'm one of the easiest Star Wars fans out there. There's not a project that I won't watch. There's very few projects that I don't enjoy. That doesn't mean that I won't revisit it or that I don't recognize it as objectively bad, but I don't view The Last Jedi as one of those things. So have to do that disclaimer. I know that I'm about to dive into some of the negatives of this movie. My friend Jordan would be delighted. Jordan, I know you're listening. Like and subscribe, please. So my first gripe, I think, would be, and this is kind of along with the sequel trilogy, but it was disappointing that this movie kind of carried the same problem. For all the things that this movie did different from the sequel trilogy, I was disappointed that there just was not a lot of variety of aliens or a perception of like a wider galaxy out there. I know there's the Canto Bight scene, but I still feel like it's very human dominant in a galaxy where, particularly with like the Resistance, I guess I'll say that. I feel like there's only a few alien pilots or members of this Resistance. Because I am thinking of like on the Jedi planet, there's those stewards. But in the First Order, it makes sense that there's not a lot of aliens or diversity. But in the Resistance, where historically there's like a room full of aliens and the galaxy is kind of banding together, you have, you know, more diversity in this wider galaxy. I felt like the Resistance is kind of human heavy, and that felt weird.
And that is a good critique.
I felt that in The Force Awakens too, but this movie didn't fix that.
Yeah, so I can see that for sure, because it's like, if I go back to the original trilogy, yeah, we followed Han, Luke, and Leia, but you had Chewbacca, who was right there by their side at the same time, right? And he was great and he was different, but he was right alongside them. And then you also had folks like Admiral Akbar. It's a trap. And they were like key figures of the rebellion. But you look on the Resistance side and like, well, yeah, Chewie's there, but he's not really doing a whole lot. I mean, he opens up the door for Rey. He kind of has a funny scene with the Porgs, but he's not really doing much. You know, you've got kind of this other alien dude where Poe is like, that's Admiral Hodo. And he's like, no, no, no. You know, and that alien kind of shows up a couple different places too. But other than that, there's not much. Like, not in the bombers, not in the bombing run, not in the trench there with them. So, yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of otherworldly figures there.
Yeah. It is funny because like I felt like there were way fewer, and then like as I was thinking about like more specifically the Resistance,
they felt more like decoration than rather like this is how this world operates. It was
exactly.
it was like a garnish rather than a main ingredient of the dish. All right, Matt, that's a good gripe. But what else do you not like about The Last Jedi?
Okay, I love the sort of Force theme. You know, in Episode 4, A New Hope, the original Star Wars movie, when Luke's pondering the binary sunset and that music's blaring and he's like about to begin his journey, like that music is like, it resonates so well with me and usually evokes like a ton of emotion from me, and it still does. I would say that this movie overuses that theme in areas that like are cool but like I don't know, I feel like it's a miss in where it should be evoking emotion. Star Wars uses music really effectively, so I understand what it's doing. I understand the use. I just disagree with it. And
so give me a specific moment that you can think of.
So one is on Octo, which I guess it would make sense that there's a Force theme there, and it's when Rey is like trying to commune with it, and I can't remember exactly what she's doing, but there's a scene where like the theme plays, and I feel like it's in a place where like I had heard the theme maybe like 3 minutes before, and then you hear it again like 3 minutes after, and it's like you can't just use this theme everywhere. Like if it's used everywhere, then it doesn't have the same punch as it can.
Yeah,
almost like the Rocky theme. Like we can't put the Rocky theme on everything. So that would be mine.
Another, so a little too much salt, a little too much salt everywhere. I mean, a little bit of salt is good. You can have the theme in a couple places.
I understand it. I just disagree with it.
It just seems like it's overused in a couple places. Okay. All right. Okay. What else? What's another gripe?
What's going on my list of gripes? Okay.
Well, I could give something else that I like, but we've already talked about this in the Holdo maneuver of like, I love a good foreshadow. Like that was awesome. And then just the visual of Holdo, the Holdo maneuver ship going to Snoke's ship, like breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking. Like if there is, I mean, that's probably one of the best visuals in the whole Star Wars pantheon of clips from Star Wars. That one probably is the absolute best visual. Just the contrast of the black and the white going through it and the ship going through, like, and to your gripe about music, in that particular place, there was no music. It was silent, right? So it's like, excellent choice to not have any music there. But like that moment was huge payoff and visually breathtaking and absolutely beautiful. I have a lot of gripes about it afterwards. And we talked about that in episode, what was it, 2 or 3?
But yeah, check out the Holdo Maneuver episode.
Yeah. But visually and set up for Shadow, absolutely love that particular
piece. Awesome. Yeah. Speaking of visuals, one thing that didn't land for me in this, and this, again, sort of a sequel trilogy critique, but more so in this one. I expected more out of this one. Part of the fun that we experienced growing up in the time of the prequel trilogy era was just like, we went from 3 lightsaber colors to like 7 lightsaber colors.
Purple, and that was yellow, double-sided.
It was just fun, right? And it not just in the movies, but in like video games, you could like customize your lightsaber. So it really like it built around this idea that like, okay, not only did Jedi exist, but like there's a little more personality and lore and all that to this, you know, this rich story that we have. And what we get in the sequel trilogy is red and blue. Just red and blue. And not only is it just red and blue, but it's like we've got one new lightsaber, which I love Kylo Ren's lightsaber. It's awesome. But then it's just Luke's saber that was Anakin's saber. And so we don't really see any like new anything in that regard. So the first complaint there is like, well, we didn't get anything new. Like, could we get a new lightsaber somewhere? Like, that's a sequel trilogy critique. But The Last Jedi did not remedy that at all. I guess it destroyed Luke's lightsaber by the end of it. And then the next part of that was lightsabers have a very distinct sound. And I felt like The Last Jedi actually kind of messed with it a little bit. And not that it was like bad, but it was different and not better than the lightsaber sounds I was used to. It's like, it was more of like a roaring hum than like sort of like a light, more, I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit different. And it felt like one of those things that like, this sound should be like, this is part of like the brand integrity of Star Wars. Like that sound shouldn't change. It's the Wilhelm scream of lightsaber noises.
Yeah, I think you say a lightsaber noise and we can all hear it in our heads. I'm not going to try to reproduce it because I won't do it justice. But we know what that sound is. And it is very unique to Star Wars and very unique to lightsabers specifically. And as I think about The Last Jedi, like, I don't really think you hear a lot of sound of the lightsabers with one exception, and that is that sort of broken hum that you get from Kylo Ren's, because his lightsaber is just sort of, something's cracked there, man. Yeah. Something's cracked. Like, it's not working properly. And he likes it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of unique, and going back to the idea of subversion, like, it kind of takes this unique sound and makes it something different. But other than that, I was like, the lightsabers don't have much characteristic in The Last Jedi. Whereas in the other films, I was like, lightsabers are, they have personality, they reveal something about the character. Even the light versus blue coloring, you know, Darth Vader is examining Luke's new lightsaber that he constructed and like, well, I guess you are a true Jedi. It's like, so in order to be a true Jedi, you have to have like your own personal lightsaber. But let me defend the movie really quickly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because Luke's lightsaber bursts in half. And we've talked about how this is sort of the culmination of a lot of different things. A lot of things get burst in half. Rey is holding it at the end. And that, as far as I know, in the films, is the only time that you get to see the inner workings of a lightsaber and you actually see the kyber crystal in the lightsaber. Now, it just looks like a rock, it looks kind of stupid. Like, you would think a kyber crystal might have a little bit more personality and pizzazz to it, but you do get to see what makes a lightsaber a lightsaber. It's that kyber crystal on the inside. And I know they don't talk about kyber crystals in the movies at all. Very little, like nothing. That's all from outside lore of, you know, movie or TV shows and books and all that other stuff. But seeing a kyber crystal, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. I am sad that this very storied and legendary lightsaber is now busted in half, much like Kylo Ren's helmet and Darth Vader's helmet. All of these things, they get busted. But it was kind of cool to see a kyber crystal on screen.
Mm-hmm. That is cool. Yeah. I wish that scene that you referenced with Darth Vader's like observing Luke's like craftsmanship, I wish he'd been like a little critical of it. Like, oh, you could have tightened up the, the buffering on the end of the hilt here. But you know what? Let's stop by my shop here.
Yeah.
And let's
I always wanted to build a lightsaber with you, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. A father and son moment before they go to the Emperor.
Are you proud of my lightsaber, Dad? Are you proud of it? Did I do it right?
Take us to floor 4 before we go to floor 5. I want to take Luke out of my shop real quick.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of like the storied lightsaber, one thing that I thought that J.J. Abrams actually did a really cool job of, when we talk about like force powers that we haven't seen before or experienced or seen on screen before, like, I actually liked the idea of these like sort of force echoes that Rey could tap into, that Maz from that cantina joint was sort of teaching her about, that she touches this lightsaber, she has like this moment and she's like pulled into this sort of experience, and there's like depth, like the force is like focused on the depth of this object that has been or seen through a lot of things. And if that's whether that's the object that does it or it's raised like particular power, the force is just like manifesting itself in interesting ways. But I loved that concept happening with the lightsaber. And then like JJ kind of picks it back up in the Rise of Skywalker with like Darth Vader's like melted mask. Like he's got that in his bedroom, which is kind of weird, but he kind of keeps that through line from Force Awakens to Rise of Skywalker. However, Rian Johnson just like flat out does not address that at all. There is nothing else that Rey touches that has any kind of shows that ability. The lightsaber or anything that like she learns with Luke doesn't like tap into any of that. And so I feel like that was kind of an opportunity to explore something kind of cool that just like wasn't on Rian Johnson's agenda, where you just like, you know, we'll leave that off. And JJ brought it back, which is fine, but it could have been cool to see it explored more.
Yeah, this idea of what would be explored there? What do you think could have been developed more with Rey and the lightsaber? What could it have been? I mean, this is schoolyard talk right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, I wish I knew where he was going with it, right? But it seemed like there was this mystery around the galaxy and who she was and who Ben Solo is and these objects that are in her path that are kind of revealing. It's almost like a scavenger hunt of like revealing something, some bigger thing, you know? And like, I don't know how well it would have been executed. I know that like, if it's anything like J.J. Abrams brought us in The Rise of Skywalker, where there's a dagger with the carving of the Death Star on Endor, and like it could have gotten crazy and silly really, really fast. But the idea that she may have been like following these like relics and artifacts that we're familiar with, and maybe some that we're not familiar with, that explores areas that we haven't seen before, like more ancient Jedi or Sith stuff that she's maybe she learns and taps into like a more ancient power and like communes with, I don't know, touches Obi-Wan's robes, you know, and has a vision. I don't know. that's just kind of where it could have gone. This ability could have gone a little further, and it didn't.
Could have gone a little bit deeper and helped Rey, because Rey seems to be rather self-taught force wielder, shall we say. I don't know if we want to call her a Jedi or not, but she's very self-taught, and it seems that she can tap into that when she's in proximity to people or things that are very key or central, or have seen a lot of journey within the Force, and that didn't really get explored any further here. But I did love when Luke says, "Look, I'm gonna share two ideas of the Force with you, right?" And I'm blanking right now. What are the two lessons about the Force that he taught her? That there's a light and a dark, and you reach out with your feelings. And then the second one was hubris and legends, right? Okay. So one thing that I did like was, like, I love in Empire Strikes Back when Yoda is trying to teach Luke about the Force. Mm-hmm. And we also get a similar thing here with Luke, and he's going to give Rey some lessons about the Force, but he also has a caveat of why the Jedi must end, which I don't. Mm-hmm. But I do love the lesson that he's trying to teach her of balance in the Force. And it's really interesting. You've got that little fountain outside, or it's in the top of the mountain cave, like, the religious symbols here are just dripping. Literally, there's water dripping, right? You've got water dripping. You've got this pool. They're on the top of a mountain, and very Old Testament type religious.
They're basically like on an altar out there, you know?
Exactly. You've got an altar. The stonework within this fountain is like white and black, like a yin yang type of symbol. Right, where there's balance in that, and Luke has to like teach Rey how to tap into the Force, and she's learning both light and dark at the same time. And we talked about music earlier. I do love Rey's theme as it plays as Luke puts her hand down on the little pebbles, and you get the da 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 da. Like, Rey's theme is actually really great. I love Rey's theme.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's another like that I have is Rey's theme. when he's trying to teach her that, and she sees light and dark. Life and death, all of these things are a symbiotic circle. I love digging into the mysticism of the Force, right? I don't need to get too scientific like Qui-Gon Jinn and midichlorians. Like, I don't need that, right? But some mystery, some things that are unknowable, even though we try to know them, we try to understand them, the fact that it's unknowable is what makes it appealing to me, right? And I just love how Rey is trying to walk this through. And I think about Rey's cave experience a lot. And I still don't know exactly what to make of her cave experience. Like, I have a few ideas, and I go back and forth on if I like this or if this is one of my gripes, because I'm like, well, if I fully understood the cave experience, then maybe it wasn't complex enough, right? Or challenging enough, or thoughtful enough. But the fact that I keep trying to understand, what does Rey's cave experience mean? There's still some mystery there for me that I haven't quite figured out. And we'll talk about this later on, I think, when we do kind of Rey's episode a little bit. But the mysticism, the mystery, the we don't fully understand all the things, and that's okay, is one of the things that I do like.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Bragboard. Quick question. Have you ever been asked, what did you accomplish this quarter? And your mind just goes blank? Not because you didn't do anything, but because the work is scattered across Slack, docs, meetings, your memory, or worse, your managers. That used to happen to me all the time. Bragboard is a simple tool that captures your work as it happens, and it turns it into clear, credible proof you can actually use in reviews or one-on-ones. So when the question comes up, you are ready, not scrambling. If that sounds familiar, check out Bragboard today. Visit bragboard.work to start your 42-day free trial. That's bragboard.work.
That's awesome. I like that they brought back the concept of the Force cave again. Like, if you're going to have an episode that tries to explore the Force a little more, and the best example up to this point of that was Empire Strikes Back with Luke and Yoda in the swamp. Luke has a similar type of experience where he's faced with some type of trial. And this is, it's more common, I think, outside of the Star Wars movies. Like, you see this sort of theme repeated quite a bit. But as far as in the movies, these are the only two experiences where, like, someone's going into a dark side area and having a dark side experience where they're having to face something, right? And I'm with you. Like, I enjoy the mystery of the Force. I don't like things like overly explained or telling me what it can or can't do. And it's it's funny because I think most people feel that way too. Like, Star Wars is at its best when, like, we can be surprised at what the Force can do. But it's weird that, like, in these moments of, like, teaching, and kind of what you're saying, like, he's teaching her what it is, but, like, he's also teaching her that it's still mysterious.
It's unknowable, and, like, right? Yeah.
Like, let me help you understand it to this point. And by understanding it at that point, then you can grow from there. But that is cool. So one that's not so much of a complaint, but I will say, I am absolutely at peace with it now, but the biggest conflict that I had leaving this movie when I first saw it and that left sort of a bad taste in my mouth was that it was not episode 9 and Luke Skywalker was dead.
Oh.
I left the theater and I was like, because I'm a Luke guy. He is my number one Star Wars character. And I was like, there's no way. Like, why? And as I pondered it, and this is before episode 9 even came out, I was like, wait a minute, hold up. Luke dies in episode 8. What is that going to mean for episode 9? And then I got stoked again. I'm like, there's no way he does not come back as a Force ghost. And if he had died in episode 9, then all we're going to get is one of those end of the movie like waves like in Return of the Jedi. After the party, it's like, that's not enough. So this actually gave him an opportunity to show up as a Force ghost and like be a mentor the way Obi-Wan and Yoda were, or I guess Yoda wasn't dead yet, but the way Yoda was in this movie and Obi-Wan was throughout the original trilogy, it allows us to see a legacy character like Luke Skywalker become that. And I think that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
However, conflicted because I was like, episode 8? Come on.
No one's ever truly gone. Yeah. Well, I'll have a lot more to say about this when we get into Luke's episode.
Yeah.
Like,
for
how
sure.
did he die? Was that really how he should have died? But anyway, we'll get into that.
The last little bit, and this is one of those takes you out of the moment a little bit, which you hate. In a movie like Star Wars, where it's very immersive and you're in the galaxy far, far away, These type of things bother, right? And it just so happened that I don't know if it was I think it was the year after this movie came out. Maybe it was the year before. I can't remember when Solo came out. But Solo, a Star Wars story, made a choice to have a thing with these golden dice that were not a thing in anything else. They existed in the Millennium Falcon. But there's no reference to them. There was no attention put on them. They meant nothing. They were basically a prop, a decoration on the Millennium Falcon. Solo made it a thing where it's like something that he passes on to people that he talks to. So if you hadn't seen Solo, you don't know what these dice are. You have no idea. Hmm. You have no idea why they're special. They're just, they are what they are. They're dice. I can't help but feel like to make some kind of through line for Solo, they decided to use this as the object for Luke to show that Han Solo is always with us to Leia as he hands off some golden dice. And I'm just like, I'm a Star Wars nerd, so like I knew what they were, but even seeing them there, it felt like they didn't belong. And I didn't have enough like equity with them, with Han Solo in association, to be like, yes. Like, he should have handed the Carillion striped pants folded up to her.
Yes. And yeah. Or the jacket. Or the his blaster.
Blaster. You know, like, yeah.
There's so many Han Solo things that make Han Solo Han Solo.
But no, it had to be these golden dice from a spin-off movie that, you know, that's its own conversation for maybe we'll do one Solo episode on Solo, a Star Wars story someday.
We'll do a Solo. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I agree with you. The dice are kind of stupid, in my opinion. It's like they're trying to force something that really doesn't need to be forced at all. The one thing, though, is Luke puts the dice in Leia's hand, and he kind of touches her. He kisses her. But when he puts the dice in her hand, she gives him a look. And on first watch, you think the look is she's like, oh, a surprise. What did he just put into my hand? But as I've been watching the film, I've watched it, I don't know, 3 or 4 times now since we've been doing this little project, right? As I've been watching it, I realize, okay, Luke never touches Kylo Ren. They never touch. Luke leaves no footprints, right? Because he's astro, yeah. He's force projecting, right? So it's like when Luke walks in and we think that he's touching Leia, and is that look that Leia gives him a look of, you're not really here? Like, does she realize it? Does she realize that this is some force projecting that's happening? And that's the look that she gives him, rather than, oh, my deadbeat husband's weird dice from spinoff movie are now suddenly in my hand. You know, like, that's what you see on first watch. But now that you see this, and like, Luke has zero physical interaction with anything. Mm-hmm. So when he touches her hand and she doesn't feel anything, and she kind of gives him this look, and then he gives her this other look like, don't say anything. Pick up what I'm putting down here, you know? And she kind of's like, okay, you know? There's something in that exchange that I'm still unsettled about of, is she surprised about the dice, or is she surprised because she's figured out that Luke is projecting?
Well, you've given me something to look at differently watching this movie, so I'll be watching for that.
There you go. There you go. Okay, I have one last like that has come to mind. And I'm sorry that so many of mine are visual. But like you say, Star Wars is so immersive. It pulls us into this world. And I think I mentioned this a little bit before, but Snoke's throne room is spectacular. Like, it is intimidating and it is menacing. Like, we don't get to see a lot of Sith Lord throne rooms. We see the Emperor's on the second Death Star, and it looks like a battle station. You've got these weird tubes going up. You've got steel and lights and elevator that opens up right there, and two guards in these like robes that are like, I don't think you could actually fight in those. That doesn't seem like very practical guard attire, you know. And then they go, but Snoke's throne room is like, no. If you were the Sith Lord Supreme Leader of the galaxy, what's your throne room on your capital ship going to look like? Boom. There it is. Like, very narrow bridge that communicates to you. Your death is on either side. Like, you are not in charge. You walk out of that elevator and immediately you're like, okay, I could die on either side. My life is frail and it's held by a string by this menacing giant in this huge lifted throne before me. And there's a background of red everywhere just to remind me that I am a mortal creature, and if my blood spills, I'm dead. Like, I'm gone. It's all gone. And my life is in the hands of this individual with the scarred face and the golden robe and all that stuff. And he's got his guards all around him, who they actually look pretty tough. They look like they're ready for combat and ready for battle, but apparently they're not force sensitive enough to realize who Kylo's true enemy was, like we talked about yesterday. But the throne room visually was just, it was amazing. It was truly, truly amazing. And then the fight that they have in there, the Kylo Ren Rey starting to tentatively team up the guards, like, there are some really cool things that happen in that fight scene, and it's pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. But I guess one gripe I have about it is armor doesn't do anything for anybody in Star Wars unless you're Mando and you've got the special
Beskar.
The Beskar, thank you. I was gonna say Mithril, but that's Lord of the Rings. But unless you've got Beskar steel, like, all armor is useless. Stormtrooper armor, Imperial Guard armor, it's all just stupid. I don't know why we have it, besides it looks cool. But the throne room, visually, and the battle that ensues, totally epic, totally awesome, totally worth the
look. Awesome. I would agree with that. Well, I mean, this was fun. Certainly, I have things to go back and watch differently. Convinced me to give gripes about this movie that I do not like doing. But no, it was fun. It was fun hearing some of the things that you liked that I obviously endorse and completely agree with.
All right. Well, did we get to double-sided lightsaber mind blowing? Did we get there? Maybe.
Yeah, we'll have to. Yeah, let us know. Email us and let us know if you had to clean your headphones after hearing this.
Yeah. Was it a surprise what Matt didn't like? Was it a surprise what I did like? Yeah, you'll have to let us know. So, fantastic. That's it. Well, join us tomorrow We'll have another great debate. We'll go back to our assigned seats in this house. I'll embrace the light of the... Ooh, let's start that one over. We'll go back to our assigned seats in the house. I will embrace the dark light. Matt will be advocating for the light.
Back on the path.
We'll keep the final debate over The Last Jedi. The schoolyard debate. We'll keep it going. Because you are listening to Last Jedi, The Final Debate, I already know something about you. You care about stories that matter. Stories of courage, corruption, friendship, sacrifice, and the battle between light and darkness. So I want to invite you to my other show, The Lore of the Rings. It's a podcast exploring the world, wisdom, and wonder of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, which I think is the greatest fantasy story ever told. If you love deep dives and epic conversations, come wander Middle-earth with me. Visit ringspodcast.com and start your adventure.